You could at least try and have a good time.
Why are we here?
Everybody, this is Again With Us, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 6, Jane's Addiction. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Another dreadful episode title.
There have been worse. We are here, of course, to talk about Jane's Addiction, not the band. But before we get into that, we want to tell you what's happening on our Patreon. This is a suggestion by our supporter, Matt C. Dropping April 15th, let's watch Thomas Calabro, Patrick Muldoon, and Vanessa Williams in Ice Spiders. This is a sci-fi original movie. It is now streaming on Prime Video, and we'll link that in the show notes. Just to let you know what happens in this thing. A team of young Winter Olympic hopefuls must slalom to safety when a horde of giant mutated spiders spin their way out of a top secret laboratory. And the tagline on the poster is, "Hell has just frozen over."
Okay, that's pretty good. Pretty, pretty good. Don't hate it.
It's not bad.
Got a couple more Jane titles in case they're looking for ideas.
Great.
Jane of My Existence.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Jane Law, like Dane Law. John Grisham's Jane Maker.
The Jane Maker, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we are not going to be talking about alternate Jane puns at our Patreon, probably, but who knows? You can find us there at patreon.com/againwiththis. Let's start with our D plot. Boy, did it earn that grade. Turns out Matt mm-hmm. didn't have to hurry back to school from rehab. Good old Dr. Dan enters Matt's room to see Matt packing his bag, but he doesn't think that Matt is ready to leave. And Matt says he's been through the whole regimen and he's okay now. Dan notes that Matt hasn't even admitted to himself that he's an addict, which, by the way, is not how we talk about these matters anymore. Use person-first language. You would say a person who has addiction or substance use issues. You don't identify the person.
Maybe, maybe not. Just take it with a grain of salt.
Yep. Oh, no, he hasn't put the mic away. He's got more.
Oh, no. Fifth and last record of the day, ladies and germs. Buckle the fuck up.
Matt insists that he just needs to get back to med school, but Dr. Dan's heard it all before, and Matt calmly says he is there voluntarily, and now he is leaving. And when we see him next, he's at the hospital asking Dr. Schulman why he's not on the schedule. Oh, it's because he's suspended. She tries to leave, but he grabs her arm. Drink and asks who narked on him, and she refuses to say, but he thinks he knows and he'll be back, and she's like, whatever. So Matt goes to Dr. Dan's house, the address for which he somehow has, to accuse him of snitching, which, sorry, no one would be more likely to have an unlisted address than someone who runs a rehab center, I would think.
Yeah.
Matt declines to come in and denies that he's high. He's mad that Dr. Dan got him kicked out of medical school. But Dan didn't tell anyone anything. Discretion and trust are paramount for him. And then he asks if Matt's connection was Greg Parker. And Matt just stares, so Dr. Dan says Greg already got busted, and he named names. Matt feels like an idiot, which is not the same as apologizing, which he does not do. Dr. Dan offers to call in some favors to try to get Matt's suspension lifted if Matt takes his drug problem seriously. Matt already has regular sessions set up with a counselor at the hospital, but he's suspicious about Dan's motives. And as Dan said, he's been where Matt is. Also, he likes Matt. Oh, Matt likes him too, I guess, because he's the only available option, which is always the case in a Matt plotline.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. To our C plot, Michael meets up with that blonde again. The sub music is only medium bad or my defenses are down. One or the other. Clip two.
This is terrible. I don't know what you're talking about. Not everybody makes it. Not too far along the way. Something changed my mind. Between then and now, I've been wondering. seriously. Jane 5. Yeah, that's bad.
It's not good. I'm just saying it's less bad than usual. It's definitely less bad than that Spin Doctor shit from last time.
Oh, I thought that stuff was less bad because it was so crazy that it was kind of entertaining. This Fair is just, enough. I don't know, like a sentient hacky sack formed a band. Pass.
I don't even think it has that much personality, honestly. it's
someone's snack might be. Anyway.
But we're not here to talk about the sub music. We are on the deck of the beach house. Michael is stretching before a run when Kimberly comes out to compliment what great shape he's in from all his jogging lately. And he thinks she's coming on to him, so she apologizes. She's still not ready. She needs him to be patient some more. So why doesn't he go for a run? And he agrees that a nice hard run on the beach is just what he needs. And he's been running long enough to have a big sweat oval down the center of his shirt when his mystery blonde suddenly appears and gives him her address. He should go there that night. He won't be disappointed. And on what is at least the next night, based on the other plot lines, Michael shows up at the blonde's back door. Not a euphemism. The actual door. She takes a break from lighting a million candles to go let him in. And a funny thing about this show compared to literally any primetime soap you would see now is how shitty and ill-considered all the decor looks at everybody's house. Like, the chair next to the fireplace here is for sure a sidewalk rescue. You can see this in the visual aids. Like, this is at least, in 1996 dollars, a million-dollar house on the beach in Malibu. And it looks terrible.
Yeah. Absolutely awful, like Goodwill thrift second home Verbo furnishings. Yeah. Awful. And it's all in that like Golden Girls palette of sand
and pastels.
Wet sand.
Yes.
And some faded teal. Awful.
Fortunately for her, Michael is not there to critique her interior design story. He's there to fuck, and he maintains intense eye contact as he closes the door behind him and dives onto her face, which is the most Mancini thing ever. He does not know this broad's name. And as she pulls his shirt off, he says he's married. She doesn't care. And they've barely made it to the couch before he sits up and says he can't, but she pulls him back down again. And he kisses her a little more, but then repeats that he can't and hauls ass running away from the house. Like, you can see the gif of the visual aids. She's not chasing you, dude. Like, calm down.
No.
It's fine.
There is not a horde of ice spiders following him. do you remember her deal?
No, but I've already done the docs for the next several episodes, so now I do know. I don't remember it. I know it from reading ahead.
Got it.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Booker.
Okay. All right. at the practice the next day, Michael hectors Kimberly for a patient's number so he can call about some test results. And, sounding bored, Kimberly says she already called the guy. Michael testily reminds her that she's not the doctor, and after she says it won't happen again, he apologizes for overreacting. He's trying. She knows they should just have a relaxed evening at home watching videos that night, which sounds good to him, except he thinks he promised to cover late rounds that night. And of course, there's no late rounds. Michael returns to the blonde's house and then changes his mind and then turns back to see her watching him from the doorway, not very subtly licking her lips and tossing her hair. It's very generic seduction moves. She knew he'd be back. And this time he doesn't say he can't. And I guess they were short on footage because we watched them go at it for a while. And that's it for them. We're already at the B plot. Meet your newest love pentagon, Allison, Jake, Jane, Billy, and Samantha. We rejoin Billy and Samantha right after Jake's failed confrontation with Billy about the brick. She is surprised to learn that Jake is a violent person, I guess because she doesn't watch the show. And when they stop at Samantha's door, Jane opens it. Samantha goes in to make them coffee, and Billy comments that he suspects all this has something to do with Jane. She doesn't know what he's talking about. When she gets to the curb, she sees Allison's car, takes the giant sewing scissors she just carries around in her purse, and repeatedly stabs Allison's tires with them. Like, I think you got it. It's so much. You can see this in the days, too. It's
yeah, Buffy stabs. Doesn't take that many swings at a vampire. Settle down.
That's true. So Billy's apparently decided to stew on it all night and then show up at Jake's door the next day to yell at him for embarrassing Billy in front of Samantha. And Allison is like, Billy, but has no follow-up. Jake promised Allison he would leave Billy alone. Billy makes a shitty face at them and sidles off. And then Jane appears in the courtyard. Allison says she'll walk out with her. By the gate, Jane is nervously babbling about nothing when clip 3.
Oh, no. You have a flat tire.
Oh, no.
I mean, yeah. Like, not everyone in this cast is up to, like, bad actors doing performing bad acting in a soap. Is sometimes it doesn't quite work, but she nailed it. Well
she
done,
did.
Josie.
Yes, between that and...
yeah, flat hat. So good.
Between that and Allison's reaction to her surprise party, there's been some very good, unconvincing reactions lately, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Allison corrects her. She has four flat tires. This is also when we learn that Allison drives a Z28. So, I don't know. I guess she's part Italian. Who knew? Jane wonders, who would have done such a thing? Allison thinks she has a pretty good idea. Can Jane give her a ride to D&D? Which, is she trying to chase down Billy? Because he probably hasn't even gotten to his car yet. But somehow... Billy stepped through a portal, beat Allison to the office, and is already sitting at his desk with a bunch of work spread out when she shows up behind him. He obviously denies slashing her tires and further denies that he needs therapy for his rage. And he lets Allison list all her accusations against him and then smugly announces that Jane slashed Allison's tires through the brick and probably started the fire. Allison says that Jane was with her when she saw the tires, as though that proves anything. Yeah. So Billy tells her about Jane hitting on him and why, and that Allison should watch out for her. And Allison says she has to go, but not that she is sorry, which she should. Again, say you're sorry when you fuck up, guys. You and Matt.
Yeah. Also, you could do this in a phone call. I know it's a soap, but come on.
I mean, I assume she had to see his face to be able to read if he was lying to her.
But it's Billy.
But it's Billy.
What good is that going to do?
You
like,
can't read
oh,
his face.
Mouth is open. He's telling the truth.
Exactly.
What?
At Jane's, later, as in the store, Samantha asks Jane to tell her about Billy. I mean, the last time the two of you had a conversation about it, she was saying she wanted to date him, and you were saying you weren't interested, and then you went out with him anyway, so maybe ask someone else to tell you, but... Samantha burbles on that Billy's really nice, and then things turn bizarro, and so Jane tells her about Billy's and Allison's dead, drowned spouses, who were, by the way, daughter and father, and when Samantha once again fails to run screaming from all of this... Jane says she's sure Billy will explain his whole history to her himself. Enter Billy, clip 4.
Just came by to see if you want to grab a late dinner.
I can't. I have to do a thing.
Thing?
Yeah, Sam's got to go to the warehouse to pick up some slacks we got in. It's kind of an emergency.
Well, I could go with you. You want to go down to a warehouse this time of night by yourself?
Oh, I've done it before. Talk to you later.
So what did you say to her?
Nothing.
Look, Jane, I know you're the one that's hassling Jake and Allison. They're together now. Get over Jake. In the meantime, stay out of my life, please.
Look, Billy, maybe you can just forget Allison. Maybe you never really loved her. At least not the way I love Jake. I can't just forget.
Fine.
What the fuck?
Did he not propose to Allison in the premiere of this season?
Maybe.
I think he did after she stood him up at the restaurant, which was the finale.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
What the fuck? Anyway, I have to do a thing. Come on, Samantha. At Shooters.
I know.
Allison and Jake are still bickering about who is terrorizing them when Jane walks in. And after very brief small talk, Allison calls Jake to the back with a computer question. I don't think he can answer it, but he goes. And Jane follows to eavesdrop as their fight continues. Jake thinks Allison has been spending a lot of time with the guy she broke up with. When?
What?
Like, when did that happen?
No.
But... Jake denies that he's jealous of Billy. Allison shoots back that Jake always defends Jane and he doesn't listen to Allison. She thinks the situation is getting on both their nerves and that they may need space. But when she gets to the doorway, he tells her not to go. She doesn't want to, but everything's so confusing. And Jane smirks and takes off, so she misses it when Jake tells Allison he loves her. It's been 3 weeks, okay? It's been, like, definitely under a month, you guys.
Yeah.
But... this diffuses all of her anger, and she loves him, too. And the next day, Samantha and Billy meet for a picnic lunch. Ooh, dry baguette. Looks great. See this in the visual aids.
Ants. Ice ants.
Oh.
No less.
disgusting. Anyway, he decides to address an awkward question head on. Clip 5.
So I know you still think I'm hung up on Allison. It's just that we have a long history together. I really do want to get on with my life.
Yeah. I'm glad we're talking about it, actually, because it's sort of been the elephant in the room, you know?
Mm-hmm. You spent a lot of time with Jane. I hope you don't put too much stock in what she says. I know she's not my biggest fan.
Actually, Jane says really nice things about you. She says that it's no surprise that you have your ups and your downs, because when Allison left you at the altar... Oh, I'm sorry. Even with my mouth full, I managed to stick my foot in it.
So what else did Jane say?
About Brooke drowning in the pool. I'm sorry. I'm talking about your dead wife.
It's okay. I just wish I was the one to tell you. It's a painful part of my life, and I have a lot of regrets. I'm gonna move on, you know? I just don't want my past to affect our future. So do I get another chance? Am I still in the game?
I guess I could give you another shot.
Samantha, I swear to God, you have the memory of a goldfish. What are you doing?
Well, and she's just, like, I feel like she's talking with her mouth full in 50% of her scenes.
Yeah.
Or she's, like, blabbering on about her how her town is so small that they had to borrow a stoplight from East Buttfuck. Because it's, like, it, no one cares. Like, no one cares, but no. What are they trying to do with this character? It's not charming. It's just weird. And you feel like maybe she's not cognitively capable of giving consent. Mm-hmm. Like, how dumb are you, really?
Yeah. This is not good.
Also, it's Billy. Still Billy.
That night, Jake and Allison are out for a walk, commenting tiresomely that no one walks in L.A. They hear a bottle rolling behind them and then a thud, and Jake decides to hail a cab. Not something you can just do in L.A., by the way.
No.
And puts Allison in it, and when he calls out to whomever was following them, it turns out to be Jane, and he grabs her by both arms to stop her running off before he can confront her, and she admits it was her all along. It was a mistake that they broke up. It was Richard. She didn't mean to push Jake away. She wants him back, and she'll never let him go. But as she forcibly tries to kiss him, he pulls away in disgust, and she pouts and walks off while he looks completely stunned, like an idiot who should have listened to his girlfriend, who was right all along. And then Billy and Samantha leave dinner, which apparently went off without any issues for once. And Samantha's babbling on about what a picky eater she was as a kid. And Billy lets her talk until she pauses before going in for a kiss. And she tries to say how it was, but he's like, don't, and kisses her some more to shut her up. And for once, I don't blame him, because shut up, Samantha.
Yeah. Their kissing is so, so lippy. Mm-hmm. It's just really a lot. I hate them both.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
They're two bad characters. It doesn't make them better to put them in the same plot line together.
No.
Back at the complex, a sheriff is knocking on Jake's door while Jane hangs back with a second cop. When Jake gets to the door, Jane faintly says he's the man who's been stalking her. So the cop at the door gives Jake a notice. He can show up for court or stay 100 feet away from Jane at all times, which she's definitely closer to him right now than that. So get your shit straight, Jane. But the cop tells Jane to go inside and lock her door, and when Allison yells at her that she's crazy, he warns her to keep it down, and at her door, Jane looks smug as hell. This is a very bad development. Oof. Yikes.
Yeah. This is not even getting into the whole Sid is trying to rep Samantha's art by saying Sam is a Russian.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, will we?
We will. Yes.
Oh, good. That's a pity.
Finally, our A-plot. Amanda tries to adjust to new pains in her ass at work and at home. And Amanda has just gotten into her office when Craig materializes behind her, pretending to kiss up. She starts making demands, but he's already anticipated everything she asks him to fetch. Enter Arthur to confirm that she did give Craig all of Billy's accounts. Arthur also wants her to bring Craig to her next few pitch meetings so he can see the master in action. Or should he say mistress? And Amanda was seemingly in a good mood before this, but at the mistress line, her face goes cold, but she'll see to it. And it seems like Michael DeBar has given up on pretending not to be British, by the way.
Mm.
Amanda's day then gets worse as she is dragged to the grand opening party at Kyle's, which is just a standing around, like, cocktail party. It's a restaurant. Seat people and serve them your food. What the fuck? Kyle sneaks up behind Taylor to say she looks great. She knows. He asks where the necklace she's wearing came from. She dodges that she just doesn't wear it much and changes the subject to the great opening they're having. But Kyle hates this shit and thinks he and Taylor should leave. She orders him to mingle and he agrees, but puts a 2-hour clock on it. And he heads straight to mingle with Sydney, who brings up the painting that he's interested in and spins a bunch of bullshit about the artist. He is a postmodern expressionist, post-disco European, but Kyle doesn't care about any of that. He just wants a name. And Sydney comes up with Samuel Kirov. He's Russian. He doesn't really speak English, which is why he needs Sydney in this story of sorts. Yeah.
Elsewhere. Like a high-rated primetime drama. This is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very incomprehensible, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere,
yeah.
Peter and Taylor end up standing together. Taylor commenting that Amanda sure leaves Peter alone a lot. Peter guesses he should try to find Amanda, but first gets an eye fill of Taylor's necklace. And she's like, yes, it's been in her family for years, which it definitely hasn't. Those lariat Mm-mm. necklaces have only been in style for like 3 years at this point.
Yeah.
Not an heirloom.
No.
Someone else that Peter knew a long time ago had one like it, he says, and Taylor beams. And Amanda sees Peter and Taylor chatting and heads for them to say it's time to go if Taylor's done fawning over Amanda's husband. Taylor says they were just talking, but Amanda thinks standing less than a foot away from someone is fawning, which even at a crowded party, that seems excessive. But Peter decides not to get between them, and as they leave, Taylor watches them go, as always, creepily. And the next morning, Peter's swimming laps when suddenly Taylor's standing at one end of the pool, flirtily kicking her toe in the water and asking if he wants company. And Peter, no fool, says the pool's all hers and gets out just as Amanda comes down the stairs, sees Peter standing next to Taylor in her small bikini, and with an edge in her voice asks what might be delaying Peter on his way to the office. And Taylor watches him go, creepily. At the store, Sydney dreamily talks about Kyle and his interest in hanging Samantha's painting at the restaurant, and Samantha's super psyched for the exposure. No talk of money yet, by the way. Sydney will take it over the next day. Samantha assumes Kyle would want to meet the artist, but Sydney says all the big name artists go through agents, and she's offering her service for a small commission, which, again, has not made money as far as we know. Samantha thinks that's ridiculous. She will go with Sydney to the restaurant, but Sydney says Samantha can't meet Kyle because of all the lies Sydney told Kyle about her, and actually tells Samantha the real lies that she told. Because, she claims, no one wants to buy serious art from someone perky. But since Samantha signs her painting Sam, it could work. And they'll continue this ruse until she becomes a big hit and then reveal her. JT Leroy Neiman over here. Samantha does like the idea of possible actual money and agrees to go along with Sydney's harebrained scheme until her paintings start to sell. Why any of this? Literally,
why
cares? Who cares?
What a waste of Laura Layton.
It truly is. Ugh. So then Billy comes in to talk to Amanda, and she cuts him off to say he has to get Craig ready for pitch meetings. Billy snits at her for doing everything Arthur tells her, and she replies that Billy's lucky to have a job, actually. And he leaves without discussing his topic, just as Peter walks in to ask Amanda for a quick bite if she knows what he means. And Amanda thinks he should be out drumming up business for the practice and has to work through lunch anyway, but she'll make it up to him with a romantic dinner for two that night, as he suggests. She can do that Thursday. And as she's writing it in her planner, he, like, leaves. Very funny, like, doesn't even say goodbye.
Fair.
Over to Field Manor that night, the gentlemen are in leather club chairs drinking coffee out of cups with fucking saucers. What? We get that they're fancy. This is too much detail.
Mm-hmm.
Craig asks why, given all the companies Arthur knows, he has such a hair across his ass for D&D, I'm paraphrasing, and it's because Billy was Arthur's creation and Amanda destroyed him to defy Arthur, and you can't trust a woman like that. And what? Craig guesses being a strong woman who crossed Arthur isn't grounds for dismissal unless it's his wife. No one cares about this backstory either. Yeah, exactly.
Who cares, really?
But also, Arthur is trying to dismiss Amanda. The issue is her contract. Keep up, Craig. Arthur says this is business and has nothing to do with Craig's mother. But anyway, here's the big plan, clip six.
This week, we have a pitch meeting with AP Wright Award, and now Connor Moran is the chairman. He's been doing business with D&D advertising for years. Same old campaign, year in, year out. Pure, wholesome, family values crap. Only this year, he'll do something different.
Because?
Because I've already pre-sold him on the notion that he needs to go after the youth market. Now, Amanda's going to go in there with the old campaign he's always bought. Only this time, I'm going to send you in there with a new idea that I'm going to give you. That way you'll look like the up-and-comer and Amanda will look like she ought to be cleaning out her desk.
Dad, I wish you would just let me go in there and kick Amanda Woodward's butt.
She'd have you for lunch, Craig.
Maybe he'd like that.
Why does Craig have to be involved?
Yeah.
It's have
so complicated.
It really is excessively complicated. Get a lawyer who finds a way to void the contract and void it or buy her off. It's not that fucking hard.
No, it's not. The next morning, Amanda's annoyed that Peter is ignoring her at breakfast to read the paper. He drawls that he's not a morning person, but she says he used to be, morning, noon, and night, wink, wink. By the way, Taylor's outside swimming laps. Is that where Peter would rather be? He's not interested in Taylor. Kyle seems like a nice guy. Is something wrong with making new friends? Peter asks. Amanda thinks it takes time away from Peter shoring up his practice, and Peter says she's way out of bounds, which she's not really. I don't think we've seen him at the practice since he's gotten out of jail. But
yeah,
she drops it. He can do what he wants career-wise, but the McBrides are tenants and they should keep it that way. And shouldn't he be getting dressed? And he bitches that he used to look after himself before he was married. And she decides not to engage, saying she loves him and leaving. And he grabs her arm, but nicely, to check that they're still on for dinner at home that night. Sorry, the next night. She says it's a date, so we all know something will definitely come up that requires her to cancel. Because we've seen a soap opera before. So Amanda's at work when Craig shows up to pitch her an idea for the water client. They should aim for the Generation X alternative rock crowd rather than the old-timey family concept that's always worked in the past. Mountain bikers, skaters, divers, be daring, etc. And over the rider logo, the graffiti tag, it's in the water. This was also already a very well-worn advertising motif by the late mid-90s, like on our sister podcast Patreon, Extra Extra Hot Great. We watched that compilation of ads from 1986 or 7 or 8, which had that, like, Brad Pitt with the Pringles, which was the same vibe as this. Yeah. So, I don't know.
This is like something Clone High was parodying not that long afterwards, so.
Yes. Yeah. So, to Craig's suggestion that they try to be hip, Amanda says that all Connor Moran knows about hip is that Elizabeth Taylor had hers replaced, so I guess he's old and gay. Ba-dum-bum. Craig graciously accepts Amanda's refusal to run with his idea, and as he's leaving, she makes sure he knows to keep his mouth shut at the pitch the next day. And then Sydney's delivering the Marilyn painting to Kyle's. Kyle loves the colors, and Taylor cracks that it will certainly cover up some wall space, but she lets Kyle handle it, and he brings Sydney to the kitchen to talk money, but really to have her taste another sauce. She calls it tangy. Apparently that's not good. And then she suggests $1,000 for the painting, and he's ready to write her a check on the spot and does not question her request that he make it out to cash. And
Jesus.
She starts wiping phantom sauce off his face, and he backs away. She's very attractive, but he's not interested. And she tries to stammer about the innocent version of what she was doing. They both fall over each other, apologizing, ending up shaking hands as friends. And at the D&D elevators that night, Amanda reminds Billy that he's been trying to talk to her for days. She knows Arthur's trying to depose her and install Craig, so does he know more than that? Billy wants his old office title and salary back before he spills, and Amanda agrees. And sure enough, Amanda has to cancel the romantic dinner at home because the water pitch got moved to 7 p.m., which would never happen. And no. A bitter Peter hangs up on her, "I love you." And then it's time for the meeting. Despite what Amanda said to Craig about his hip idea, she now thinks it is time for a change and gives Craig the floor to pitch it to both Fields' shock. And Craig tells her to go ahead, so she does. And she goes on the whole thing. Gen X wants a product that respects their intelligence. She even uses his tagline, and Connor Moran loves it. It was time for a change, and she read his mind, and Arthur with dead eyes compliments Amanda's good work, which is just what you would expect from her. When everyone has left, Craig calls that quite a performance, but she doesn't care whose kid he is. He should never mess with her. And here's the backstory on the water pitch. It's another gala committee jobby. Albert Pinkham Ryder, this is from their website. Albert Pinkham Ryder was a 19th century American artist and a major influence of the abstract expressionists. It's in the Water resonates with multiple meanings ranging from painting aesthetics to the problem of the lack of access to clean water in many parts of the world and the politics of water in Southern California. And the script called for a climactic final scene which revolved around the presentation of an advertising campaign. And Gala initially offered Zeneca Falls to the writers as a possible name for the fictional water company. Conceptually, Gala was making reference to Zeneca Pharmaceuticals, a trans-global bioscience corporation known for tamoxifen, the breast cancer wonder drug marketed by the company as Nolvadex. But besides drugs, Zeneca's other business was paper bleaching, a toxic industrial process which creates waterborne carcinogens called organochlorides. Here's the clincher. Organochlorides are a leading cause of breast cancer. They seep into the drinking water and accumulate in sex glands, like breasts, until the mutating effect of the contaminants cause tumors. It was Gala's contention that Zeneca was guilty of cornering the breast cancer market, producing both cause and cure for a disease which claims millions of lives annually. And Gala pitched this idea to the producers, who summarily shot it down out of fear of a pharmaceutical company's attorneys. Good call, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, Gala pitched the art historical approach revolving around AP Ryder. The writers agreed and rewrote the script. Zeneca Falls was greenlit until a spelling attorney caught wind of it at the last minute. So the end result, Amanda Woodward was conceptually transformed from high-powered wonder bitch to art historian. And that's the rest of the story. So you can see the art in the visual aids, of course, which, you know, kind of hokey, but knowing the backstory makes it more interesting, as always.
Mm-hmm.
So since his plans fell through, Peter goes for dinner at Kyle's. And Taylor, at the host stand, tries to make small talk, but Peter just wants to see Kyle, and they bro out at the bar over very masculine drink and dinner selections. And Taylor makes a beeline for Peter and tries it again. Amanda's working late again? Maybe it's her, but she thinks a woman should spend as much time on her marriage as she does on her career. She punctuates this with a weird touch of his forearm, and he flinches away. She asks if he's sensitive. He says no. She thinks he may find that she knows him a lot better than he thinks she does. And when Kyle delivers Peter's plate, Taylor takes off and watches watchfully like a creep. At Field Manor, Arthur is bitching Craig out about Amanda knowing exactly what to pitch to Ryder down to the artwork. He knows he didn't screw up, so that just leaves Craig, who admits what he did. He thought he might work his way up legitimately. But Arthur yells that Craig doesn't have to. He's just Arthur's puppet. And of course Amanda stole his idea. After eating her dirt, does he have a clue? Yes, he will get Arthur Amanda's head on a platter without anyone else's help. I doubt it. And then Amanda's standing on her stairs, aghast, watching Peter chummily enter the courtyard with McBride's. He has obviously had a few, and then a few more after that. Clip 7.
He's my favorite. Hey! There's the little woman.
I was gonna ask where you've been, but that's obvious.
It was my fault, Amanda. I talked Peter into hanging out at the restaurant until closing.
You know, Amanda, you shouldn't leave Peter on his own so much. Somebody might come along and steal him. I want you to stay away from my husband.
Amanda, that's enough.
She punches him in the pool.
There, Taylor. Now you can join Peter for a little moonlight swim.
It's been a while since someone got pushed in the pool.
Yeah.
Nice to have it used for comedy instead of tragedy. Poor bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Both McBrides are amused, but Peter knows this is bad and heads home very wet. And that's the end of this episode, where it feels like literally nothing happened.
Yeah.
Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Dr. Shulman.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Like, Matt is just like storming around in the hallway, grabbing her arm. And she's like, I don't have time for this, son.
Mm-hmm. Boy. I don't know. I guess Amanda? I mean, she's annoyed by her neighbors, but she still seems to be in charge.
Mm.
All hours of the day, mostly.
Yeah.
She saved Billy's job, but, you know, he can't have everything. Least valuable player. Samantha, please get a clue. Just one clue.
Yeah. Taylor, spit it the fuck out. Like, there, it's six episodes. Whatever it is, it cannot be that interesting.
Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, Jane tries to set Jake up on a harassment charge. Samantha tries to set Sydney up on a date. And Michael's setting himself up for a fall with Megan. Set yourself up with some Tums before you visit the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. Those are on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. It's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and take a moonlight swim on over to our Patreon page. There's a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content there, including, for our subscribers at the $5 level and up, our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. You'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm bungled suck-up cappuccino order Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Zipless Jog, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Mitigating Arm Grab Circumstance, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.